Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. Today, we're off to the theatre in the competent hands of Matt Wolfe, the London theatre critic of the International New York Times and enormously experienced arts and theatre reviewer for various other international media organisations. He's also on the judging panel of a highly prestigious theatre award. And if Matt doesn't rate it, well, it isn't worth seeing.
That's very kind, Georgina. I don't know about that, but thank you.
So let's start at Shakespeare's Globe Theatre with Imogen. Yes. Now, this is a reworking of a classical play. It's Cymbeline, but not as we know it. So, Matt, tell us about Matthew Dunster's production.
Well, it's pretty wild. It is totally out there. The whole thing about this play, this production, is that it's Shakespeare renamed and reclaimed, as they put it. And what Matthew Dunster, in conjunction with Emma Rice, who runs the Globe, because it's her vision, have done, is take a kind of knotted late Shakespeare play that audiences probably don't know, although it does get done not infrequently, but still people don't know it all that well, and first of all, change the focus from the title character, who it normally is, who's the King Cymbeline, to the young female protagonist of the play, Imogen. So that's the first thing. But more importantly and dramatically than that, the production is really now, in every sense of the word. It's a very street production. If you got a bunch of really dramatically savvy, agile, mostly guys, but some women, together from a kind of East End estate with all the attendant music and kind of the score of Skepta and you know, a lot of kind of rap and gangland hip hop and whatever, this is what the result might look like. So, as you can probably tell from this, it's the kind of thing where the purists are going to have absolute apoplexy. They're going to be going, but where's that scene? Where's that character? Where's the beautiful poetry, which is why we go to Shakespeare? And everyone else, and I'm actually in this latter camp, is going to think, you know what? The original play will be done again. And in fact, it's coming to London. The Royal Shakespeare Company is doing it in November. And how interesting to have a production that just gives it its own energy. This is a show about energy. There are fight directors who are working 10 to the dozen, aerial acrobatics. I mean, it's sort of a Shakespeare play, but it's really almost a dance piece with text attached. That's how it seems to me.
How does it work then if it's so modern in that very, very classical setting?
Well, one of the things they've done is kind of, and not everyone may like this, that they've sort of enclosed or encased, shall we say, the setting. So not entirely, but when you first walk in, you know, the great thing about the Globe, famously, is how open it is. The actors come out and they have these two audiences, the people in the pit who are paying £5 for this amazing immersive experience, and then everyone else seated in the posh seats. But here, there's a kind of curtain that's been drawn around it to kind of encase it within a black box. And you think, well, that's a little bit counterintuitive because the whole point of the Globe is to do away with that, to throw it open. But I think the reason Matthew Dunster and his design team have done that is so that you have the contrast between something quite contained and then something totally feral, something wild, something reckless. Mm. And for me, it really worked. If you want Shakespeare that's about energy and about pulsating passion, this is it.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it plays more to what audiences of Shakespeare's day, how they would have received it, than to the rather kind of po-faced audience of today.
Well, that's, I think, a really, really good point. And that's one of the things I think Emma Rice's Globe wants to get back to, which is that now I think a lot of us are too reverential about the work, perhaps, and think, oh, well, you know, there are certain rules that must be obeyed. And of course, in Shakespeare's day, these were contemporary plays. And there was no sort of received wisdom. You just surrender to it. And particularly this play, which has fairy tale aspects, as a wicked stepmother. There's also a spoiler ahead, a beheading. There's exile. And then at the end, there's this kind of magical scene of reconciliation where all these multiple wrongs are put right. And it really is unclassifiable. So given that, why not give it the Dunster treatment?
Absolutely. So the Dunster treatment is given to Imogen. It's at Shakespeare's Globe in London, and it runs until the 16th of October. Now, some big names next. No Man's Land by Nobel laureate Harold Pinter. It features Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart. It's at the Wyndham's Theatre. It's directed by Sean Mathias. Now, The Telegraph gave it 5 stars, saying it's unmissable. What's your verdict?
Well, this is a, interestingly, and you might think the opposite would be true, but this is the London transfer of a production that began on Broadway, where I saw it. And it's interesting because there is hardly a more English play than this. And in fact, hardly a more London play. Places like Hampstead Heath, very important in the play, a pub in Chalk Farm, Bolsover Street, not far from where we're sitting in this part of central London. All of these are crucial to the text. So it is really a London play. So for this production to originate in New York is kind of counterintuitive. And I saw it there, but I thought it was actually better here. And I liked it very, very much. It's a play I absolutely adore. And it's a play that means a lot to me because when I was very, very young, I, on my first ever trip to London, saw the original production. And I don't remember much about it, but I remember John Gielgud and Ralph Richardson, the original stars, having this incredible kind of stage magnetism. And McKellen and Patrick, Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart, who are both actor knights, have their own charisma, particularly McKellen. I mean, his performance has to be one of the highlights of the past season. He is incredibly funny and also incredibly moving. And there's no calculation, there's no sort of seizing for effect. He looks wonderfully raffish and seedy, playing this sort of aesthete called Spooner, who's a great lover of words, hence, I suppose, the name Spooner as in Spoonerism. And he has turned up in the kind of deliberately blank home of this mysterious man named Hurst, played by Patrick Stewart, and it's immediately unclear as to what their history is. Have they just met on the Heath, by the Heath? Are they very old friends who might have gone to Oxford together? Have they perhaps shared various women? Who's to say? Yeah. But the great thing about Pinter's world is that everything that's opaque about it is tantalizing. And I think what Sean Mathias, who's a longtime colleague and friend of Ian McKellen's, has done is keep all these things on the boil so that you want to decode the mystery. Instead of shutting you out, it draws you in.
Mm. You talk about the history of the characters, but of course, McKellen and Stewart have a long history too. Waiting for Godot was their big, notable performance together, wasn't it?
Yes. And in fact, when No Man's Land was on Broadway, it was done in rep with Waiting for Godot. So that was why it was in New York. I think the difference between the two productions, to be honest, is that in Waiting for Godot, I felt McKellen and Stewart were actually quite equally matched. Here, I really do think it's McKellen's show. It's not that Stewart isn't good, but McKellen is having such a good time. And a lot of the most luxuriant language in the piece falls to the character of Spooner. There's a wonderful phrase near the beginning where he describes himself, where he says that a wit would say of him that he's a betwixt twig peeper. I just love that phrase, whatever it might mean. But it's just even a fun thing to hear. And you just get McKellen's delight in performing this language and filling shoes that John Gielgud did so wonderfully 41 years ago, but that McKellen shows he can do just as well in his own way.
It's actually a four-hander, isn't it?
It is. And the two other characters are these men, again, their sort of identities are indeterminate, who are in Hurst's employ. It's not clear. One of them might be his son, although presumably not. Are they his cooks? Are they his henchmen? Are they sort of the heavies? They're played by Owen Teal and a really fine young Irish actor named Damian Maloney, who plays the youngest of the characters, Foster. He's particularly good. First of all, he's got flared bell bottoms that are period perfect in all their grotesquerie. And he's terrific because he's incredibly charming, and then he can turn that on a dime and be also chilling and menacing. And I think that's kind of the landscape of the play. The play is really a play, I think, about the approach towards death, as the title suggests. But along the way, there's a lot of genuine cunning and guile and good humor in it.
Mm. Just very quickly before we leave this one, we talked of Cymbeline, and of course that's been updated to reflect modern times. And I wondered if this play suffers at all because of the time and the circumstances in which it was written. 1975 when it first came out. And Pinter at that time, I mean, the received wisdom seems to be that the play was very much set against the backdrop of his own failing marriage and depression, really.
Exactly right. And I think probably much more then than now, because, you know, now this is all ancient history, you could do a real psychobiography on this play. I think what is actually lastingly wonderful about this play is that the landscape it inhabits is so up for grabs that it will continue to tease us as long as the play is done.
No Man's Land, starring Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart, directed by Sean Mathias, is at the Wyndhams until the 17th of December. And a quick look now at a new play. Now, this is at the Orange Tree in Richmond. Bond. It's about to go off on a nationwide tour. It's a rom-com by Zoe Cooper. It's directed by Derek Bond. It's called Jess and Joe Forever, and it was commissioned by the Old Vic New Voices scheme. Now, it's a two-hander. Time Out called it very wise and very funny, and the actors kind of break the fourth wall, don't they? They speak directly to the audience. Does that work, Matt?
It works totally. It's a little gem. I mean, it's the kind of play you almost don't want to overpraise, because it's not No Man's Land and it doesn't pretend to be. It is a perfect miniature. And if you approach it as a perfect miniature, it's perfect of its kind. It's immensely satisfying. It's beautifully directed by Derek Bond. And it's got these two young actors, neither of whom I'd seen before, Nicola Coughlan and Rhys Isaac-Jones, both of them absolutely super, playing a kind of budding romance after a fashion, except that when we first meet the characters, neither of them is yet 10 years old. But by the time the play ends, they have entered puberty. But that makes it sound very reductive. There's a slow burn to the play in their relationship, which I couldn't begin to give away because that would ruin the whole final sequence of the play. But what you think it's about, I will say, is not what it ends up being about. And that makes it deeper, richer, and more moving than you think it's going to be at first. There's a lot of playing with the notion of storytelling, with meta-theatricality, but all of that is kind of gently done. It's not sort of, you know, ladled down with a trowel. And even if it were, these central performances are so winning that you are on the side of these two young people throughout.
Well, it's at the Orange Tree Theatre until the 8th of October. It's called Jess and Joe Forever, and then it'll be on tour. Finally, to Things I Know to Be True. Now, this is a co-production between Frantic Assembly and the State Theatre Company of South Australia. It's on at the Lyric Hammersmith just for a little longer, I think until the 1st of October, and then on tour. It's by Andrew Bovell, and it was originally set in Adelaide in Australia. I'm wondering how it works outside of Australia.
Well, the interesting thing, and this seems to be happening more and more, there was a production of The Crucible recently on Broadway, which did sort of the exact same approach. It's still set in Australia, but what they've done is they've said to the British cast, don't worry about the accents, just sound like you sound, or sound like the English equivalent of the Australian regions in the play. So Imogen Stubbs, a very well-known English actress, has a kind of English regional patois, but it's certainly not Australian. Andrew Bovell wrote a lovely play that the Almeida did some years back called When the Rain Stops Falling. It was also done at the Lincoln Center in New York. That was absolutely great. I wish I could say the same about this. It's interesting to see this in the same week as Pinter, because whereas Pinter leaves everything kind of tantalizing and a little bit out of reach, this is a play, in my view, with absolutely no subtext. It's entirely bald. Everything that it's about is presented. It's kind of one toxic encounter between parents and their rather variably wayward children. And you get every kind of permutation of the wayward children. There's a twist which is not dissimilar to the one in Jess and Joe Forever, but in Jess and Joe Forever, it's handled much more deftly. And by the end, I just found it kind of wearying. And the Frantic Assembly approach, which is to physicalize everything, again, in Cymbeline or Imogen now, they physicalize most things. It works very well. What they do here is they take actually rather mundane, banal encounters and they give a kind of balletic grace to it. There's no point. That's not what the show needs or requires. Mm. So what is meant to be true to me is that I didn't like it.
Matt, thank you very much indeed. Things I Know to Be True, a co-production between Frantic Assembly and the State Theatre Company of South Australia. It's by Andrew Bovell. It'll be touring the UK from October, culminating at the Chichester Festival Theatre until the end of November. And that's the end. Matt, great reviews as ever.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Pleasure.
To know what's going on at the cutting edge of theatre. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. My producer was Holly Fisher and the researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Do join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll be talking books. But for now, thanks very much for listening. Goodbye.